Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Micro Brew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. My colleague Kurt Hoag is on the other line. You know him well. He, of course, was at a whole bunch of these games during the week. A tremendous week for the Milwaukee Brewers, with one really big caveat that we'll talk about in a second. But 5-2, they started the week 0-2 against the Dodgers. It looked like, it's one of these stories where the Dodgers whoop up on the Brewers. Well, not so fast. Brewers won ugly the next two nights, made it happen, split the series, and then went on to sweep a team in the Cleveland Guardians that came into the week with the best record in baseball. And Kurt, that's a pretty dang good week for the Milwaukee Brewers. It wasn't always beautiful, but it's all W's. They are running away with the National League Central, 11 games. How are we going to be pessimistic on this podcast, Kurt?
You will find out. Over the course,
we're going to have to dig a little deeper.
60 minutes, it'll come out.
Yeah. The people have come to rely on our ability to find
you usually started off with the open. You set the tone.
That's true.
To establish the run. And then play action pass off of it.
You riff.
So I don't know. That. I don't know what kind of performance I'll be able to deliver today, considering the linebackers haven't, they're not going to be jumping up to defend the run. I'm going to have to be slinging it on my own, maybe.
Spoken like a guy who's clearly watching the Packers preseason game going on as we record this against the Denver Broncos.
Which is just a disgusting thing to like even monitor. I want to be very clear about that. If you're watching this, you're a sicko. And I probably will be turning this off. It's really bad.
It is of poor quality and also of meaninglessness, because 31 Packers who are normally starters, many of them not even appearing in this game. We don't watch the spring training games. You watch the spring training games, but they are by and large
so many practices. Spring training games. So many.
Yeah. So,
trying to think of anything that mattered from spring training this year.
Eric Haas won the hearts and minds of Milwaukee Brewers fans.
Did that matter? True.
I don't know. That's kind of something. That's something.
This is true. 2 years ago, Eric Lauer was really bad, and it was concerning. So there's that.
I'm trying to remember. Was 2 years ago the year he was bad, or three?
Yeah, his spring training, he was throwing like 90. He was like throwing like 90, 91. I was like, this is weird. You should be like topping 94, 95. Or no, he was like throwing like 88, 89.
Yeah, I would say preseason and spring training have that in common. It is a time for things to
go wrong,
DL
Hall,
but not necessarily.
It was DL Hall this year. Congrats. You got the spring training Eric Lauer Award.
We'll talk a little about DL Hall. He had a really nice outing at Nashville over the weekend, which we could discuss. But Kurt, we have to start with the Brewers taking names, man. 11 games up in the National League Central. I wrote this on. It's over. They're going to win the Central. I'm just going to put it in the ether, because that's like historically impossible for them to give up the division. At this point, I think that's kind of fair to say. At this point now, it's about whether or not this team could get a first round bye. They're a half game behind the Dodgers. They're 1.5 behind Philadelphia. I would say that both of those teams look catchable right now. I can't believe I'm saying that, but the Brewers, like, I still think it's because the overall ecosystem of baseball is just not very good right now, and that no team is presenting themselves, at least in the NL, as a true, true juggernaut. But the Brewers are kind of as close as anybody. Like, they are really quite exceptional. And, you know, we do have to talk about the Christian Yelich out for the year situation. That is a pall over as good as it has been the last 2 weeks. But I come back to the kind of the similar question to last week. How much of this is real, sustainable stuff? And, you know, I it's not like they're doing anything that is dramatically different from how they've done it all year long. They're getting gutsy pitching performances or outright good pitching performances from guys like Colin Ray, Tobias Myers. You know, no one's tearing the cover off the ball, but they are hitting the ball. William Contreras seems to have rediscovered something. And they are, Jackson Chourio's good, and they're just doing what they do, man. And that has been good enough. They're over 71 wins, 72 wins now, 70, right? 72, 52, 20 games above 500. That's outrageous, outrageous. And I don't even have anything bad to say. I'm at a loss for words here. I don't know what to do, Kurt. Tell me.
I think I'm just going to let you roll with what you feel. Your feelings are valid. They're important.
Thank you.
Unless you're like sitting here screaming about how bad the Brewers are, then I might poo-poo it a little bit. But No, things are good. It is pretty funny how the Central has played out 80% of the way exactly as we figured. Oh, yeah, everyone's just going to kind of like exist around 500. Mm-hmm. No one's going to be good. Someone's got to win. And then the Brewers are just lapping everybody.
It's true. And again, hitting the ball pretty well, at least getting the timely hitting that they need. Willy Adames has really had a sensational offensive season in addition to Contreras and Chourio, both Contreras being really, really good this week, had four homers in the week. You know, Jackson Chourio with he's just been so fun to watch. He just continues to pound the ball. And even when he makes outs, looks good. Sunday, maybe not the best example, but he also got hit in the hand Sunday, which was very, very frightening with a pitch. I think he's okay. He finished the game, of course. So, right now, I would say the only thing you can say about this team that is a negative is that Christian Yelich is not going to be part of it for the rest of the year. He broke the news himself on Thursday after a pretty uplifting win over the Dodgers, where they rallied for 3 runs in the eighth. What a buzzkill. He said he announced that essentially they have exhausted all options in terms of trying to rest that bad back. Surgery was the only way to move forward. He was just in too much pain. He is not available for the rest of the season after having that surgery on Friday. That is a loss. There's no way around it. I don't care that the Brewers have played extremely well without him. That is a massive possible bat that they're not going to have. And I think it'll lead us to talking a little bit about the outfield picture and if there's any adjustments they can really make. They're now short on outfielders at a time, you know, coming into the year, that was seemingly the least of their worries. They had outfielders galore, but Blake Perkins went on the injured list now. Christian Yelich out for the year. Joey Weimer is no longer in the organization. You know, there've been some twists and turns. So I know that they're going to be okay because they've been okay without him, but losing Christian Yelich feels like a pretty significant blow. And it is also that. So give me a sense of what you think the clubhouse is saying about it, feeling about it, and sort of how you look at it.
This to me is not a death blow to the Brewers. I mean, like, we've seen them deal with this all year long. I mean, going back to last year when Brandon Woodruff got hurt, this does feel a little different in terms of the significance of it. Just because we've seen the level that healthy Christian Yelich plays at, although it became increasingly clear that it was going to be tough for him to get back to that healthy level this year. And then obviously inevitably they decided that was clearly not going to happen. But look at it this way, right? You're in a 5-game series. Who's to say that Blake Perkins or Garrett Mitchell doesn't outperform what Yelich could have done in that 5 games? Now, sure, if you want to string this together for a month in the playoffs, that's going to be tough. And also, you really want to get into the nuances of that argument I made. We just saw what the Dodgers were able to do to Garrett Mitchell. He has quite a hole in his swing at the top with velo, mm-hmm. quite a hole. And in the playoffs, what do? You hyper-focus on these things. And if there's a weakness like that, it's going to get exploited, especially by a team like the Dodgers. So that kind of leads me into the other side of it, which is like, I don't want to poo-poo this injury, to shoo it away as it's, you know, they'll be fine. Because I still do feel optimistic about what the offense as a whole on the aggregate can do. But this sort of gets into what we're talking about with the offense, like, I don't know, a month ago when a lot of guys were struggling. It's like, I have major questions about every single one of these outfielders, except Jackson Chourio, really. And it's that much more difficult to hit your ceiling when you're trying to work through these things with these young outfielders who are struggling, have struggled at the plate. I mean, Sal Frelick's hard hit rate, one like the first percentile in the league. He does not make hard contact. We just talked about Garrett Mitchell. Blake Perkins gives you another option, at least when you're facing lefties. That'll be nice. So you don't have to play both of those guys, essentially. I wonder if Jake Bowers ends up, you know, if like these struggles continue, if Jake Bowers gets in the mix a little more in the outfield. They seem to not trust the bat there, or not the bat, the glove in the outfield, and that's probably fair too, considering how they're built around defense largely. Simply put, though, this complicates things, but they're a team and a clubhouse and have a manager and other veteran leaders that it's not going to feel like too huge of an impact probably the rest of the way. It'll just be interesting to see what happens with the offense when the playoffs begin.
Yeah, I think what you're saying there, a little unspoken, is that the regular season doesn't really matter anymore. I mean, yes, they have to clinch, and yes, they can chase the Dodgers and the Phillies for one of those top spots. I don't want to rule that stuff out as being very important. But ultimately, you know, we've seen teams with the bye in these first two seasons under the current format hasn't been great. So it's by no means a free pass into the NLCS. They don't need somebody like Christian Yelich to be consistently there for them for the rest of the regular season, because the regular season is pretty much wrapped up. It is about the small sample bonanza now that is the postseason, which is, I mean, I don't know if you remember this, Kurt, who the Brewers' best player was against the Cardinals in the 2011 NLCS.
Oh, as if I would not recall. Well, offensive player, you should probably caveat that.
Yes, please.
Extreme
yes,
caveat. It was none other than Unity.
Yes, you glitched there for a second, I heard. But Unieski Betancourt, of course.
Unieski Betancourt, Uni B.
Yes, tremendous.
Did he commit fraud?
Tremendous.
Was it fraud? Allegedly?
Did, yes.
Allegedly?
I don't know if you're referring to his baseball career or his post-baseball career exactly, but yes is the answer.
He was in the news for something, right?
He was, yes. He got into some legal trouble. We will leave that here. But yes, Unieski Betancourt, who was not a good baseball player overall at the major league caliber.
Excuse me.
Tremendous playoffs. Tremendous. It makes no sense. Jerry Hairston was a monster against the Cardinals in the 2011 NLCS. I mean, like it can be someone out of the blue because it's just a teeny tiny sample. And sometimes you focus so much on the main, you know, the meat of the order, you forget about these guys on the periphery who are out there doing the same amount of work to try to exploit whatever the pitchers are throwing at them. And they wind up with a pretty nice run of 4-6 games. But like you said, if this team is to go to a World Series, which we cannot take off the table the way they've played, that's just so much harder without your stud in the middle of the lineup. And yes, Contreras is hitting the ball. Yes, Adames and Chourio.
Yeah, that was going to be my next point, is Contreras. That's probably the biggest, he can carry the biggest load. Him and Adames too. Those guys are going to have to carry a lot of load. Not necessarily the rest of the way, but in that series for sure. I remember earlier in the year when all these pitchers were going down and it was like the end of the world with each one. And then guess what? Oh, Tobias Myers ends up getting a rotation spot because of this. And now he's got a sub-3 ERA, like 20 starts in. That's kind of how baseball operates. And who's to say that the Brewers don't win the 2019 World Series if Jordan Lyles pitches instead of Josh Hader? Like these little things that you just can't predict. You have no idea what's going to happen. Maybe Sal Frelick carries a 500 BABIP and doesn't strike out for an entire series. Seen it happen. I think he leads this team in 3-hit games. He snapped like an over 27 just on Sunday. But that's the same guy who like BABIPs his way into these remarkable offensive games. So yeah, there's a lot of different ways this could go. I'm not writing this team off. You're just writing off one of their pathways, which is Christian Yelich goes nuclear, and that's probably also one of their better pathways.
Sal Frelick, as you mentioned, his OPS of 653 is really quite bad. I would say it's There are worse OPSs that you could find on this roster, but the contact is really the issue. And he had a couple moments this week offensively again that were really rough. He was trying to be a slap hitter at one moment against a pitcher who was really wild on Thursday. Brewers ended up winning that game, but you know, it just, for me, it's reinforcing that he is, because he's a solid defensive player. I don't want to take that away from him, but they have those guys. They could I feel like figure out a way to do better. But the problem is, I don't know if that's true. If they can do better, I feel like if this team is going to be a playoff team, that's not a guy you want starting baseball games, especially against left-handed pitchers, which is going to happen because there just aren't that many options. You know, Garrett Mitchell, I know he's up and down too. I think there's some serious questions there, but what is the outfield picture the rest of this year? Because like I said, it doesn't ultimately matter. Maybe it's just, hey, get him as many reps as possible and see what happens in the postseason. But Sal Frelick feels like, you know, they are going to, if I were them, I would explore ways to get a better bat in that lineup, because then you really kind of clear out any holes in that lineup. I think what
from where Keston?
Well, that's
trade for Keston. He's not on a 40 man trade for Keston. Is that, acquire
a prospect? Are you available?
Means are there to upgrade the outfield? Isaac Collins?
Yeah. Can he play outfield?
Yeah, I think he's playing outfield. Pretty dang sure he's
pretty speedy. Yeah,
Joey Weimer's gone. Brewer Hicklin didn't just get called up when there was a clear opportunity to call Brewer Hicklin up. So
that's true, very true.
Yes, Tyler Black does not play outfield. I still think he.
Well, that was going to be where I would go with that. Yes,
but I don't think you're doing
play outfield.
No, not right now. No, I'm shutting this down. They're not even willing to play him at first base, which is the position he's been playing all season. They're not going to play him at third base. I saw him taking some grounders at second base, which is the position he played when he was drafted. But outfield's probably the best spot for him. There's just like, what room is there? You know, really? No.
This not the time to experiment, though?
This is not the time.
11 games. The next month is immaterial.
This is the time to, I can't believe I'm having to voice of reason you on this. This is the time to see what Sal Frelick or Garrett Mitchell can do. And I think Blake Perkins is probably going to play. He's a guy who has the trust of Pat Murphy. And that means a lot to this manager. He is consistent. He knows what he's going to bring. And there's like, just don't seem to be, I don't know, maybe we just haven't seen it this year, but like the struggles that Mitchell and Frelick just went through. We're going to see a lot of Blake Perkins plus that defense. And then, yep, one of these other two guys can figure out the other corner. I don't know if it doesn't work for either. Jake Bowers perhaps doesn't sit great with me, but because of the defense, that's what it has to be. There is no other path. What do you do? Put Gary Sanchez out there?
Oh man, that would be an adventure. Yeah,
he should be in the lineup obviously a lot. I think Gary Sanchez should play a lot.
He has been. They've been trying. I mean, they're finding a way to get all three catchers work.
I mean, there is a question of, do you really need three catchers? Although I really like the way Eric Haas calls games. There's other people that do too. His defense is pretty good, and he's a different game caller than Contreras is. Not to say better, but seemingly better to the eye test. So I don't think they're going to end that experiment anytime soon.
Gary Sanchez, just a glorious option off the bench against a left-hander in the playoffs. I mean, don't you think? Can't you see him hitting a home run? He hasn't actually hit a home run in a while. Don't you see him hitting a playoff home run?
Maybe you don't play him because he's just like this super wild card weapon when the other team goes to a lefty for your young lefties. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I want to be clear. I don't actually think that they should not have Sal Frelick play the outfield. Like he's obviously a very good outfielder. So if nothing else, that's what you want him for. And Blake Perkins is not all that much better of a hitter. He can give you right-handed bats at bats if you want, but I do think they're in a little bit of a corner. I just wondered if they might.
I mean, it can be a frustrating experience watching these guys because for different reasons. Garrett Mitchell will strike out 15 times in 20 at-bats when the other team just throws endless high fastballs. And Sal Frelick will not hit a single ball hard on a 10-game homestand. That can be frustrating. But there's also upside with these guys, and we probably aren't acknowledging that enough right now. Like, Frelick has been an average offensive player through
his first, 105 games before this skid. So somehow the aggregate was still okay for him until this really bad homestand.
Yeah. Bryce Turang, meanwhile, I think has looked really good in the last few games offensively. He's been tailspinning quite a bit offensively. We've talked about that. He had a really nice, week. He some extra base hits, some big ones, a couple triples, and well-struck triples at that. So maybe it's teeny tiny sample. Maybe he's turning a corner a little bit. His defense, of course, still very, very good. I want to talk a little about the Dodgers, because that's a team that you have to realistically expect. If the Brewers are to work into the World Series, they'll have to go through the Dodgers. It's not guaranteed, of course, but it sure feels like that would be a pretty strong likelihood. And the way that they played them, they lost the first two games of the week, of course, in pretty convincing fashion, even though one of them was like 5-2, but it felt like a bigger, a more lopsided game than that. Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Teoscar Hernandez, that is a lethal front four. Throw in Will Smith, who hits very well against the Brewers. They didn't see Tyler Glasnow, who's now on the injured list. They saw Clayton Kershaw, who threw another great game Sunday. Maybe he's finding something again. You would figure that they'd be able to hit him. They were able, and they didn't. They were able, though, to hit Jack Flaherty a little bit, the guy that they saw on Thursday, Walker Buehler on Wednesday. Ugly wins, but wins all the same. I cannot get behind any theory about the Brewers versus the Dodgers, except it is just a prolonged stretch of weirdness that they have not played well against that team going back several years. They haven't won a series against them since, I think, 2014. Most of those series, just 4-3 counts. It's pretty close.
A season series.
That's what I'm saying. Sorry. Yes, a season series. Yeah. Right. Season series.
They haven't won a series since 21, though. So still a while.
Right. I still think that's all it is. Dropped. I think it's randomness. But it's really hard to feel like it's randomness. It really feels like the Dodgers have something the Brewers cannot answer for. And I will talk about Tobias Myers' start specifically, which I thought was really good, even though he clearly was like hanging on for dear life at some point. That solid contact was significant. But is there anything to it? Is it possible that, yes, the Dodgers are in the Brewers' heads? And yes, it will be difficult to beat them because they are, for whatever reason, a team that has Milwaukee's number.
I don't think they're in their heads. It's a good barometer for sure. I do think the Dodgers come to town and you get a no doubt look at what a really, really good team and a really, really good lineup looks like. No doubt about it. But I will say with this year's Dodgers team, and maybe this is true to Dodger teams of recent past too, but you see them up close and you kind of look over their roster again and you see the holes for sure. I mean, they I don't want to say they handed the Brewers two wins. The Brewers kind of tried handing them back, but like the Brewers didn't play great in those two games they won, and the Dodgers did not capitalize. They did not take advantage of the Brewers' mistakes, and they handed some of their own. I mean, the go-ahead run scored on Wednesday night when Mookie Betts misses a baseball in the outfield.
Right.
This was just Mookie Betts made mistakes. Shohei wasn't great aside from the homers, but that roster gives you some reasons to think like it's beatable for sure. The starting pitching, I mean, Kershaw has looked great his last two starts. Who knows how that's going to hold up? Tyler Glasnow just went on the injured list. Seems like he'll be fine, but nevertheless, they've also hit him pretty hard this year. I think Hoskins had his grand slam against him in LA. Like the rotation is not the Dodgers rotation that you would expect it to be. Yamamoto's theoretically coming back, I guess.
Sure. But he's been like out.
These injury bugs just keep popping up and up and up. River Ryan was a super interesting rookie for them this year. Hurt.
Yeah, Dustin May's been really
sick. Walker Buehler. Walker Buehler's not it. He's not going to get playoff starts. Well, he shouldn't. Who else?
Bruce hit him really well.
The big is a lefty. He made his debut for them when the Brewers were there that Sunday game.
Yeah,
in LA. Don't remember
Stone?
His name.
No, I can't think of his
name. Stone's got good stuff, but he's also been hit around. Like, it's a good rotation, but it ain't unbeatable. And it's a good bullpen, but it ain't unbeatable. And then the lineup's got like four or five spots, depending on kind of how some of like Gavin Lux's of the world are going at that time. Where you're like, this doesn't look like a Dodgers lineup. Kiermaier, Hayward, Kike Hernandez, Austin Barnes.
Miguel Rojas. Fine players, some of them.
Guys who would come off the bench for previous Dodgers teams.
But not yeah, it's the drop off from the top four or five to the bottom four or five is significant. So
yeah,
it does feel like for the Brewers to make it, they're going to have to beat the Dodgers simply because that's what the baseball universe will demand them to do. The Dodgers don't think about the Brewers as much as the Brewers think about the Dodgers. I will tell you that.
I'm sure they don't.
They are not podcasting about the Brewers.
They have to worry about San Diego and Arizona.
they've got fish to fry, snakes to fry, and fryers to fry.
Ooh, I think that's
terrible, snake edible.
I'm not sure. I'm almost positive it's a delicacy in some places. Is it not? I'm almost positive. Are you Googling this right now to see if snake?
Yeah,
is
edible? I'm looking it up. Tastes like chicken.
So does everything.
That is literally what the top
right sauce.
All snakes in North America are perfectly fine to eat,
and that includes a diamondback. Intriguing.
The dangerous part of eating a venomous snake is trapping it and killing it. Yeah, I know that. What does snake taste like?
That tracks. Yes. Probably don't want to eat that venom. I don't know where the venom is located.
Mostly muscle and little fat, so its texture is chewy, be mild to gamey.
Oh, mild to gamey.
Different types of snakes.
It sounds like something you eat when you're trapped in the woods and don't have any.
Does sound kind of like chicken.
I mean, kind of. Everything sounds like chicken if you want to spin it a certain way. I mean, it's
meat. I would like to eat snake with you.
I absolutely decline. I decline your invitation. I'm sorry.
Next year, we'll do a live microbrew recording from the Journal Sentinels, wherever our headquarters are for spring training in Phoenix. And we will try snake.
Here is how I go to restaurants. I go to the restaurant. I look at the menu. What is the safest item on this menu? Is it chicken? It's probably chicken.
Disgusting. Maybe this is a man who doesn't like burgers and hot dogs at a table.
You're right. I don't like burgers and hot dogs. I don't. I had a burger this weekend. I haven't recovered. I hate that stuff. I don't know why. It's not because my body's a temple. I'm a rotund bald man. I eat a lot of things that are terrible for me. It's just that stuff doesn't work for me. Barbecue food or, you know, like tailgate food, it doesn't work for me. But if I go to a restaurant, give me some chicken, maybe a little barbecue sauce. Maybe
What if I smoked like a nice brisket for you?
Yes, I am on board. Mm-hmm. If we're going to do that kind of barbecue, I am in. Brisket, burnt ends, ribs. Yes, yes, and yes. But yeah, I don't do the case meats. I don't do burgers. I don't know what it is about me. I'm broken. But I am not an exotic. I do not go far outside the box.
Do you snake?
I wouldn't ever eat snake. I mean, I would like if it's. If someone wants to pay me something, I don't need it. Like it's not, I don't seek adventure with my culinary tastes. I'm extremely boring. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm just an extremely boring person. That's just how it goes. Let's talk more about Tobias Myers, who is not.
Looks like we might have to go. We might have to go to the Eastern Hemisphere for this.
Really? No one else is serving snake up here in these parts?
I don't know. I just clicked on one Reddit link and they said Hong Kong has a lot of it. So.
Well, I have been to the Deep South. They eat lots of weird things. There's people eating snakes.
This is
right
true.
Now.
This is true. Snake churches, even. They kill the snakes after, right? They don't just like let those things exist.
I don't know. Snake churches? What did you say?
You don't know. You aren't familiar with what like snake churches are? Oh, it's like a super it's like a charismatic, very charismatic, like Southern evangelical sect that involves snakes and subduing them.
Okay, well,
it's based on a story in the Bible.
I think I might actually worship also in a very boring fashion now that I think about it. I mostly just like going to the pews, no snakes, and then leaving at the end. Don't like to be involved. I don't want to do any participation stuff. That's not for me. Anyway, Tobias Myers, he is really, really good, I think. And I Don't know how good. Like, again, his start against the Dodgers, a lot of hard contact. I felt like he barely survived that thing from the first inning on. But he gutted his way into the sixth inning. He is a... You look at his numbers, and I posted this, his last 12 starts, you would put up against Paul Skenes' last 12 starts, the Pirates superstar rookie. Granted, Skenes has struck out far more people. Myers doesn't strike out as many guys as that, but he has this great defense behind him. His ERA is much lower over the last 12 starts. He's got fewer walks, fewer home runs, just about the same number of innings. That blew my mind. I didn't know Tobias was even in, you know, swimming in those waters. And I keep thinking about game one, Kurt. I keep thinking about game one of a playoff series. Who gets the ball?
All right. Come on. We had this. Well, we didn't have this conversation.
We did have that discussion. I don't believe there's any true scenario where Freddie Peralta is not that guy. I don't think the Brewers will ever turn to anyone else besides Freddie Peralta. But there is so much intrigue around, and Colin Ray too. Colin Ray, Tobias Myers. Do they give you the best chance to win? I have to say yes right now. Am I crazy? I know I'm not crazy because I know you agree with me, but.
This is good discourse. That once again is probably impossible to actually like definitively give good answers to because anything can happen. Like we saw Zach Greinke in 2011, for example, get hit around pretty hard in that postseason. But
that's true.
Yeah, I mean, it probably will be Freddie Peralta. There's a world in which he does not figure it out over the last month and a half here, and like the Brewers just realize what their situation, what their reality is. I will say this. If I lose game one of a wild card and I need someone to win me game two, the guy I want on the mound is still Colin Ray. That's the guy because I know he's almost certainly going to give my team a chance. Then again, he just got lit up for what, 7 runs by the Dodgers 5 nights ago?
Sure. Came back and threw against the Guardians and took a no hitter into the sixth, though.
And then took So anything can happen on any given day, but I do like what Colin Ray delivers on a start basis, just the consistency of it.
Yeah. It's been pretty special stuff. Very cool story to have developed the way it has. I'm with you though. I really like Colin Ray too. I know who the guy would be in the perfect world. I do think it'll be Freddie Peralta, barring a total meltdown in these last 6 weeks. And he had a good start on Saturday. You know, you could argue that that's a little bit of a corner turn. We'll see. But interesting. One last topic before we get to 3 up, 3 down. Willy Adames, offensively beyond reproach, tremendous year. Just killing it. Just really, really great for them offensively. And I don't know how many clutch opportunities he's going to come through on, but it feels like all of them. His glove, though, is interesting. He committed a couple more errors this weekend. Well, Thursday, Friday. The Thursday one was pretty bad and led to 2 unearned runs for Tobias Myers. The Wednesday one did not end up costing them. They won both games. But he's made a disproportionate number of errors, which is not the end all be all. There are other defensive stats that I think we would look at first, but those also don't love what they're seeing defensively for someone who is so elite. Willy Adames has been truly elite shortstop defensively since he got here in 2021. He has now surpassed his error count from each of the past 2 seasons already, with obviously fewer games played. He, you know, DRS and OAA, take them or leave them, they don't love his defense. In fact, I think DRS is the one that considers him the guy who's thrown away the most runs of anybody on this defense this year. Some of that is a function of playing every day, I suppose, but What do we make of this? Like, what are you thinking when you think of Willy Adames' glove? Is he still the guy you want out there for a big play at shortstop?
Well, you left me some fruit here on this vine. Yeah. It is not above eye level. Let me pluck it. You mentioned that OAA still likes or is down on him. JR. He's still in the 78th percentile for shortstops.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, but DRS has him at minus 11 runs. So
yeah, I believe OAA has him. He's a plus player, but then also plus Bryce defender. Turang is just barely ahead of him, which I feel like, again, OAA, we have our issues with OAA.
Just what your eyes tell you is right in this instance. There are easy plays that he's not making, and it's happening consistently, and that's an issue. Could it get fixed in the next month and a half? Track record would suggest yes. It's just a bizarre place for him to be in right now, defensively speaking. So, but yeah, you can't deny that it's happening. It's absolutely happening. I mean, in some of it looks like it's building upon itself in a certain way in the field. Like there was a play against the Dodger or no Friday night against the Guardians where he booted a ground ball, might've been a double play, might not have been. And then instead of just living with the result, tried shoveling it, pushing it with his glove, something to second base, and ended up sending it into right field. Everyone moves up a base. Like that's what you do when you're compounding the problem with frustration. Yeah. And that's where it seems to be right now. The offense is incredible. Very, very good. Very, very clutch. 10-3 run home runs. And you don't expect this defensive slump to go on forever. Because guys do slump on defense. I don't know if that's a contentious notion in baseball. Like defense is so level generally, but guys do slump, and he's absolutely slumping right now. But that would also make you think, right? If he's slumping, then there's a chance he snaps out of it. And is he going to slump for 6 more weeks? That's a long time to slump on defense. We'll find out.
So many of his errors have been concentrated since June 24th. I believe he only had 2 going into that game. And so that backs up the notion that it is maybe a slump. It's been all very much compacted here in the last, you know, it's been almost 2 months. So like that is a pretty long slump, but it is still possible that he works his way out of it. And I also think he probably will. I agree with you. I still think he's, I mean, I certainly don't think they're going to go with anybody else at shortstop, and I don't think they should. He's still very good. All right, let's go to some of the more granular details from the week. It is 3 up, 3 down. Kurt, I did not mention yet that I have a conversation with Devin Williams at the end of this episode, who had a very nice week. Devin Williams.
Oh, in fact, you do?
Yes, I do. I do. Had a chance to chat with Devin on this homestand. Greatly enjoy talking to him. Devin Taren Williams, Kurt, had a week. He was lethal against the Dodgers. He comes in a very tight game on Wednesday night, a game that the Brewers are trying to gut out with a 1-run win. All he does is retire Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, and Freddie Freeman. 1, 2, 3, 7 pitches to do it. Those three batters are unbelievable, and he retires them all. Very exciting. Less than 24 hours later, he comes back for another save, gets the first out at the bottom of the Dodgers lineup, the 8 hitter, I believe. Mookie Betts pinch hits. He strikes out Betts. He then strikes out Ohtani in a long at-bat to win the game for the 27th out. Incredible stuff. Incredible stuff. That's a two-run save. And then, of course, he gets another save during the Cleveland series. He looks absolutely back like the Devin Williams that you hoped he would be. Honestly, that surprises me. I thought coming off of a long, you know, missing most of the season, back injury, I didn't necessarily plan on him being this level this fast. Excellent changeup as always. Good fastball. He looks excellent. And the Brewers, I imagine, are hoping to get Trevor McGill back this week. They're going to reload on that bullpen. That's a bunch of hammers. They're really good right now. Jared Koenig looked awesome in recording his first save on Sunday. Yoel Piams has been awesome. Elvis Peguero, as long as he doesn't come in with runners on base, awesome. I mean, they have really been good. And having Devin at the back is pretty sweet.
Yeah, what can get lost in the Yelich shuffle is that this is a team that can win games with its pitching. And the bullpen is a big part of that, and it's starting to be an even bigger part of that with the way that those three guys you mentioned have looked, and then McGill, and then some other friends that could be joining the mix, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
JR, I'm going to ask you a question as I start my 3 up, 3 down here.
The what answer is Greg
blocking...
Yoel.
We'll get to him.
Okay.
I have things to discuss about our friends.
Okay.
What is blocking the plate?
You know, I will be honest with you that not only am I completely unclear on what blocking the plate is, I really, when we get to any sort of obstruction and interference calls, I got to say, I don't necessarily know it when I see it, because there are so many bonkers little intricacies and nuances and judgment calls. Blocking the plate, it sure looks like, is basically whenever there's a big collision, I think. I don't know.
I shouldn't still get worked up about this because it happens in every sport. Officials have a set of new enforcements or points of emphasis going into a season. It gets hammered right away. It makes its way around the internet, and then it stops getting called. It's the flop call in college basketball. Whatever it is in the NFL this year, there'll be something, I guarantee you, and then it'll go away.
Yeah.
That is blocking the plate, interfering, obstructing a bag, whatever the phrasing is. That is what it was in baseball this year. It's not getting called anymore. I thought that was blocking on Wednesday night in the first inning when Bryce Turing was called out at home. It was enough gray area there to say, oh, well, yeah, maybe Austin Barnes was taken. He was moving backward to grab the ball as he put himself directly in the path covering home plate. His left leg was cemented in the ground, not allowing Bryce Turing to slide in that path before he had the ball. It seems to me like it's blocking the plate. He did not have to make that motion in order to catch the baseball. The ball did not take him into the line of the runner. He took himself there to catch the ball and make it look like he was not blocking it. I don't know. The rule makes no sense. I can't wait till it comes up in the playoffs. That'll be a fun time. I'm excited. I'm just hoping I'm not covering it because I want someone else to be the one to go to the umpire's room and ask that question.
That's good. Yes.
Although, yeah, can you? The pressure. The pressure to deliver, the demands of a nation. What question will you ask the umpire?
Can you describe for me what blocking the plate is? That's my question. Pretty good, right?
Very good. That'd be good.
It would be terrible if that came up because I feel the exact same way you do. It's one of those things that was a really important issue right around the Buster Posey injury and for a couple of years after that. And it feels like now it's just like, well, it's got to be so egregious that like guys got to be just like standing there, sitting there almost, you know, for that to be called. And it just, I'm sure there are instances around Major League Baseball where it has been called. I haven't seen it come up in a while. And takes a heck of a throw Bryce Turing out tagging from third base too. That was kind of a wild play. Where am I going with number two? Let's just talk about this Thursday game where they had a wild eighth inning. The contact play had a really good week, Kurt. There was a contact play on Sunday, in fact, but there was a big one on Thursday or Wednesday. Yeah, no, this was Thursday, where the Brewers rallied for three runs to beat the Los Angeles Dodgers. They had taken a 4-3 lead. The Brewers 3-0 lead had evaporated. And I got to tell you, when the Dodgers clawed their way back and took a 4-3 lead, I assumed that the Brewers were going to lose. But they were able to load the bases with nobody out. Big Jackson Chourio double in there, some walks. They get a big clutch base hit from Willie Adames to tie the game. And then two shots on the infield. One, not really the contact play because the bases were loaded, but off of a pitcher to bring in a go-ahead run. And you had Tyler Black, who lined out. Nice play at third base by Kike Hernandez, but throw across the diamond was ultimately all that he could do for an out. And you had one more. William Contreras had a single off the pitcher. And then Rhys Hoskins hits a ball off of the pitcher. That allowed a run to score. That was the one that was actually the contact play. So they rally for three runs. Devin Williams comes in for the save. Boom. Series is tied 2-2. And suddenly they're feeling pretty good about themselves again and go on to sweep the Guardians. It's a 5-game winning streak. So crazy inning. Definitely one that you might look back on when the season is over as the moment you knew that the Brewers were really headed toward the playoffs and a division title and kind of had things wrapped up. But little luck, little timely hitting, some patience, everything paying off for the Brewers. That's how you beat the Dodgers. You win ugly because they're very good, but you can beat them ugly for sure.
JR, it was a good week for the Brewers. They went 5-2. They won five straight games.
We've established.
Team. But there was still some frustration. There were some moments that I feel like we have to talk about in terms of decisions that were made. Managerially, is that a word?
Managerially, yes, that works for me.
Manager adjacent.
I think managerially was fine.
The manager? Okay. Managerially.
Yeah, but I love adjacent. When we can get adjacent into anything,
adjacent's a good word.
It is a really good word. It feels good right.
Good word. 100%. Elvis Peguero getting into that game when he did on Thursday continues to confound the high leverage, not necessarily high leverage, but the specific high leverage usage in which he's inheriting an inning with runners on base, a tie or one run game, and right-handers coming up. It just doesn't match what he is doing. The numbers overall are just fine, but righties are hitting him harder. This is probably things that everyone knows by this point, too. He's struggling when he comes into a game. He's, for whatever reason, struggling with inherited runners. I think 15 of 24 have scored against him now, which is a lot of run. Like, that is well above average on a percentage. And in the second half, he's now done this four times where he's come into a game inheriting runners with a tie or one run game. And each time he has given up the lead or the tie without recording an out or before recording an out. So I don't understand why he came in the game on Thursday when he did. It was clear that they had him picked out to face Kike Hernandez. And just, I don't know. The way we're seeing Brian Hudson pitch, it would make a lot of sense to put Brian Hudson in that game. Maybe just try to let Tobias Myers get one more out. Could have gone to Brian Hudson two innings earlier. A lot of things to digest there. It was 4 days ago. So maybe not the biggest thing of the week, but in the moment felt pretty big. And there's also the strange part of Monday's game where they stacked the young lefties high up in the lineup. Garrett Mitchell, I think, was hitting third. Terang was hitting leadoff, not spots they hit against lefties ever. In fact, we've been told by Murphy himself that like Garrett Mitchell is not a guy that's going to play against a lot of lefties. They like Frelick in that spot a little more because of the contact skills. Murphy cited reverse splits from Clayton Kershaw in this season for wanting to go with it. Clayton Kershaw had made three starts. He also did not have reverse splits. Also, he's pitched for a really long time. So you have 15 years, 20 years to work with there. And his career, you'll be surprised to hear, not reverse splits. So I just did not quite understand the logic there. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, if I could offer just a couple of caveats, I would say that Mitchell batting that high, yes, it baffled me. But also, you know, they have to play him because they're running out of... outfielders. So they had to get Mitchell in there. And I don't know if number three is where I would have necessarily put him, but like I understood maybe why he was in the lineup. The other thing I would say about Peguero, like he did get really soft contact. Kike Hernandez, hit a dribbler through the right side on the first pitch, but it was not a well-located pitch. And it was on the ground, which I guess was kind of Elvis Peguero's specialty, but you know, you're not looking for a ground ball pitcher to get one out necessarily. I really also was completely baffled by that decision. The guy now has allowed 15 of 24 inherited runners to score. How does that not scream at you that he's not a guy you want to come in with the tying run, or I should say in this case, the go-ahead run at third base? How can that stat not, you know, how do you dismiss that? I realize that there's never just one stat or one situation, but it really, really baffled me. So I definitely was confused by that. I think sometimes Pat Murphy, when he talks about the matchups and anticipating certain substitutions to take place, you know, maybe they'll put in this guy and they're thinking about the next guy after that. Well, then they'll put in this guy. Sometimes I feel like maybe he overthinks that. You know, Brian Hudson came in on Sunday and he faced right away two right-handed batters because they pinch hit twice for two right-handed batters. You know what? Brian Hudson got those guys out because he can do that. So I am with you on the Elvis Peguero thing. Let's do my number three here. And then we'll give you one more shot here. We'll wrap that up. Number three, gosh, which one do I go with here? I got a few options lingering here. I think, Kurt, I've just got to talk about Colin Ray taking a no-hitter into the sixth inning. And I'll be honest with you, I was at this game, did not know he had a no-hitter. I was legitimately, for once in my life, not following that Colin Ray had a no-hitter going. So in the sixth inning is when I realized it was happening. He ends up giving up back-to-back singles. And wouldn't you know it, the Brewers did not give up another hit. That is, again, a team that is in first place, came into the weekend with the best record in baseball by a half game only, but still the best record in baseball coming into the weekend. And Colin Ray absolutely shut them down. You know, he was really, really sensational coming off of that outing against the Dodgers that you mentioned. I thought it was particularly, particularly good for that to be the case. And he was able to work then into the eighth inning. He didn't get an out in the eighth, but they took him out at that point. That's, you know, that's just really good. It's a really, really great, really great thing for the Milwaukee Brewers to have Colin Ray pitching at that level and to keep a team that good. I mean, that was a 2-0 game. The Guardians could have easily, you know, they got some boppers. Jose Ramirez is really good. You know, David Fry, who was one of those pinch hitters, he's been awesome this year. They've hitters up and down the lineup who can hit a 2-run homer at any point. So the Brewers needed that sort of precision to get through that game. So pretty impressive moment for Colin Ray, for the Milwaukee Brewers to get into almost six full innings of no-hit baseball. And a really nice win to cap off this homestand.
You think you know where I'm going with this?
With number three,
I think you know where I'm going with this. You don't? I have a feeling there's some people out there who know where I'm going with this.
Is it a group of like five people? Is that what we're talking about?
I don't know where you're going with
that. Just do it. This is terrible drama. Go ahead.
Yo-ho.
Yo-ho! Pirate's life for me. We love Craig.
That's right.
Tell me more.
Yeah. So I'm still not entirely sure it's going to happen for him this year with the big league club. There's a lot of options already there. We're already seeing there not being a lot of room. Like the Brewers are really slow to get rid of some of these guys that are just kind of around to pitch in long relief right now. Who knows if that'll run into September too. I do think though, that the Jacob Mizorowski thing is absolutely happening.
Okay.
Feels like a slam dunk right now. Two more shutout innings this week. I think that was his only outing of the week?
Yes, he had one Thursday night. He had a really good one Sunday that we briefly mentioned, and then
then he pitched then Thursday.
Yes, he's only had one.
Yeah.
That's correct.
And it was another really good one, maybe even better. He's not walking guys. The command looks great. It's just taken a couple outings, and you see, oh yeah, they can't touch him at AAA. And guess what? Stuff plays at the big league level too. If the command plays, he's going to be really, really good and really, really dangerous in an interesting role. I, for one, am excited to see how it works out. If it works out with Yo-Ho too, that would be great for a certain little podcast. I could think of a couple people who would like that. I mean, his stuff is, it's just as filthy and it's just as dominant at AAA. I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, but you see sort of the situations that they're being used in, and Miz has these sort of scripted out bullpen outings where Yo-Ho's sort of cleaning up some messes here and there, but he hasn't given up a run through four innings, I want to say. High strikeout rate at AAA too. But the Miz thing's happening. I think that's where I'm going with this. I feel like I can confidently say the Miz thing is going to happen.
Well, they're going to have to make room for him. And I think we have some idea of how that's going to happen. By the way, Craig Yo-Ho has thrown 27 innings in the minor leagues this year. Dude is one strikeout shy of striking out two per inning. Why are you wasting his arm anywhere south of the major leagues? But that's just sort of the crunch they're in. You know, this is a guy who could be here for a while. You don't want to just automatically start that RB clock if you don't have to. And again, I think it's about positioning yourself for the postseason. They know they're going to win the regular season. So do you bring Miz too? Do you bring those guys up now, knowing that you might want to see them for the postseason, or do you take your time because these games are, you know, not essential? You can sort of wait and see who gets hurt or whatever. Wait until September when the rosters expand. I mean, that's a timing question, and I don't. And like you said, Craig Yo-Ho may not happen at all this year at all. We'll see.
Man, 47 innings. 47, by the way.
Did I add wrong?
You did. Okay.
No.
We don't do that.
No. Here. I'm sorry. I was correct. I was just talking about AA and AAA. I forgot that caveat. He's actually 57, right? If it's, no, you're right. 47.
47 innings.
Wisconsin. I had discounted those, although those are also sickening statistics. But
191 batters faced, 90 strikeouts.
That's not even real. Stupid. That's what I do when I play video games. That's ridiculous.
On like easy level. On the easy level.
Absolutely.
People always say, like, oh, he's putting up video game numbers. Like, I don't know, man. If I was playing the show on, like, you know, moderate difficulty, I'm not doing what Aaron Judge is doing. Are you kidding me? Maybe I just stink. Maybe it's a
We underestimate how good the video games are. The video games are good. They're fine. You're not striking out two batters an inning. in video game land? Not usually.
No, not unless you're on easy.
I think the question, you know, Bryce Wilson is a guy who probably isn't the type of person who's going to be on that postseason roster as things stand now, but he's also a really young player with years of control left. And I don't know if the team would want to cut because he's got no options. I don't think they want to just willy nilly put that guy, you know, out to pasture. Like he's got some value for the future. One would think, I don't know about like Joe Ross or whatever, but they got
sure it's hard to find. We're not sure Bryce Wilson's not a non-tender candidate.
Well, he yes, he very well might be. That's just a decision that they would have to make now to get this to work. And that's tough. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to cut your length when you are 11 games up. Yeah. But I also want to see Craig Yoho. So
we have wants that prioritized over needs. That's how it is right now. Okay. What didn't we say in 3 up, 3 down? Well, we could have talked about Freddie Peralta making Mookie Betts fall down in his first at bat off of a rehab assignment in the first game of the week. Strikeout, fell down. Don't worry, Freddie. Mookie was fine. He homered in his next at bat. Garrett Mitchell casually stole a homer again this week. We've got Blake Perkins with some stolen homers. Sal Frelick has stolen a homer to end a game. And Garrett Mitchell now is also on that list. I think he kind of stole one from Jared Kelenic last week. So Brewers have a number of thieves in their outfield, just stealing home runs on a regular basis. We didn't talk about Joey Ortiz's base running flub on Wednesday that, of course, kind of set up some extra drama. Kids, when you retreat toward first base, you got to hit that bag again if you're going to go to third base. That's just how it is. I'm really sorry. Let's see. Did we miss anything else? I don't think so. D.L. Hall had an excellent start in Nashville on Sunday, so he remains an interesting wild card going forward. The team obviously they did send him down. We didn't actually talk about that they sent him down early in the week on Monday. He was kind of the surprise guy that got optioned to AAA after coming off a really nice start on Sunday. Didn't think that his next start would come at AAA, but he's an interesting guy that they have in the holster right now. Okay, that'll do it. Let's go back in time real quick. It is Remember When. Kurt, on Sunday, they also honored Robin Yount. We didn't talk a lot about Robin Yount. Do you have any Robin Yount memories? You're very young. Do you remember anything about Robin Yount? Probably not.
I would reach up and grab a Robin Yount bobblehead that's sitting right here. Actually, you know what? I'm going to do it. Last time this happened, Jesus Aguilar went bye-bye.
Yeah. Tough scene on the bobblehead front, but that also doesn't answer my question.
No death this time. This is my Robin Yount memory. I have a signed Robin Yount bobblehead from when I was in either middle or high school, and he signed some autographs at a Madison Mallards game, I think, and I waited like 2 hours in a line, and then I decided, you know what? I don't know if I'm an autograph person. That was maybe more than 2 hours, probably, but I signed it. It was free. I got him to sign it. It was free. It's a pretty cool thing to have now. That's about it. That's literally it. Sorry. Nothing else.
Yeah. Don't let that one fall off the shelf. Yount was honored 50 years since he made his major league debut in 1974. On Sunday in August, which is weird because he made his debut in April, but whatever. It was, in fact, 50 seasons. He's still not an old man. I mean, he's not 70 yet because he was so young, age 18, when he broke camp in 1974. A decision that would not be made today for a variety of reasons, but he probably was not ready for the big leagues. But I did like that they brought him in against Cleveland because it reminded me of something interesting about his career, and that is he got 1,000, his 1,000th, 2,000th, and 3,000th career hits all against Cleveland. And the 3,000th hit, which was shown on the video board, a very special day in 1992 when he finally achieved that milestone. It is a very hallowed milestone in baseball, of course, 3,000 hits. And Robin Yount, with a flare single off Jose Mesa, became a great closer after that, was not yet at that level, sent 47,000 fans, 47,589. You don't see crowds like that anymore. At Milwaukee County Stadium into a frenzy. It was pretty exciting. They'd waited through a 32-minute rain delay to watch it. It was in the seventh inning. It was late, 9:48 p.m. Brewers ended up actually coughing up the lead and losing 5-4, so that was a big bummer, but I don't think anybody really cared. It really wasn't what people were talking about. People knew, of course, that he was going to hit 3,000 hits, but he had gone into a slump, stuck on 2,999. It was getting a little dicey, and this was looking like it would be the last at bat before the team headed out to Baltimore on a road trip. So there was kind of some pressure for him to get it to cap this homestand. He'd gone hitless in 7 straight plate appearances when he got number 3,000. Funny enough, he did actually bat again in the game. He made the last out of the game when the Brewers ended up losing 5-4. So that was funny. But he gets the hit. Players rush from rush the field. Paul Molitor and Jim Gantner are the first two guys there, which makes all the sense in the world. They'd been together for 15 years on the Brewers. Pitchers stormed in from the bullpen. It was just an amazing time. He was up on players' shoulders. You've seen a lot of photos from this moment. It was a week before his 37th birthday. That made him the third youngest player to get 3,000 hits behind Hank Aaron and Ty Cobb. There was a highlight package. I don't know how it would have looked on the County Stadium scoreboard, which did not have the resolution that we have today. But people were really, obviously, they were prepared for this moment. In fact, Jose Mesa said he had a hard time pitching because there were so many flash bulbs going off, and it made it very difficult for him to see what he was doing. So he did not love that. But he became the 17th player to reach 3,000 career hits, actually the first since 1985. So 7 years have gone by since the last guy to get 3,000 hits. George Brett, though, did actually do that later that month in September of 1992. Dave Winfield, who'd been taken actually one spot after Yount in the 1973 draft, he reached 3,000 hits the following September, so there was a little bit of a bumper crop. Bud Selig had flown in. He had just been named acting commissioner, or he had rather just been named full-time commissioner. He'd been acting commissioner. Actually, no, I have all this mixed up. He was named acting commissioner. So the Brewers owner flew back on a private jet so he could watch this game, knowing that he was about to kind of take over baseball from Faye Vincent for about 60 years before he was named full-time commish. He had a 9-pitch at bat earlier in the game that he tapped out on. This is when he stuck on 2999. He had a pitch down the right field line. He struck out. So he's 0-for-3. He had flung his bat in disgust. You could tell that he was really, really wanting that hit. But he did get it. Line drive to center. Bob Uecker on the call. Everyone remembers that. I remember as a kid watching it, the TV feed had cut in. It was the stadium view. What you see, I think, in these highlight videos is the stadium camera from behind home plate. Wasn't a very good view because the game was not televised. Even with the buildup around it, there was no television feed. So what you got was the stadium view and Bob Uecker broadcasting the radio feed of the play-by-play. So that was cool, but also it's just how far we've come where a game like that would, of course, be televised. There would be alerts and all sorts of stuff going on. But that was what you got back in those days. It was very exciting for me. I want to know, and I don't actually know this. I'm going to try to Google it up. When we last saw somebody get 3,000 hits, do you know off the top of your head, Kurt?
Was it Ichiro?
Maybe.
I feel like someone should have done it since Ichiro. I have the
active Miguel Cabrera. Miguel Cabrera, 2022.
That's right. There was a lot of buildup for that one. I pulled up the active hits leaders and was wondering who the next guy is going to be. Freddie Freeman is the active leader and maybe also the most likely guy. He's at 2239. It's pretty far from 3,000. But yeah, you don't think he's going to hit till he's 40?
Well, I think he might hit until he's 40, but he's already 34 and he's probably going to, I mean, Pujols got it in 2018, but he saw, he declined later, obviously later in his years. I don't know. I don't know if Freddie Freeman's going to do it, but
Altuve's just behind him at the same age. Between those two, I feel like one of them, like they're still playing at a high enough clip and their hit tool is still really dang good. Like they're still really good at the thing they've always been really good at, both of them. So I think one of them's going to get it. After that, you have Kutch, Joey Votto, Goldschmidt probably knows there. Manny Machado? He's at 1858. He's only 31.
It's possible. It's possible.
Possibly Manny Machado. You could see Charlie Blackman, Carlos Santana, LeMahieu, J.D. Martinez. Xander Bogaerts is only 31, but he's trending the wrong way. So like, we're already pretty far away. Mike Trout. It's going to be a bummer that who knows? He's 32, but.
Yeah, he's same age. He's
on the health decline. Bryce Harper. Like, these guys are still really far away.
It's just not
1600 like, hits.
The contact tool isn't valued, right? Like, there aren't. Tony Gwynn doesn't exist anymore.
I mean, Bryce Harper's not going to need to get 3,000 hits to be a Hall of Famer, but also, like, we're going to look back at his career, and it's the same guy like Votto. They just walk too much to get 3,000 hits. Their times on base is probably amazing, but 3,000 hits is going by the wayside. Here's a good one. Here's a little fun fact for you. Gene Segura has about 30 fewer hits than Mookie Betts.
Oh, that's wild. That is a good one.
Great little fun fact.
Had a great career since leaving Milwaukee. A great career.
Where's Juan Soto on this list?
That's a good.
He's got 90. He's got 902 when he's 25. Juan Soto should probably do it.
I don't know. Maybe. Injuries are a big part of it. You can't get hurt really you can't really miss too many seasons and still be able to do it. You know, Robin Yount retired the next year. Like 19 seasons. Like that's incredible to get the milestones. Great. But that was one of the youngest guys to do it, you know, and he played 19 seasons. I don't know.
Here's a fun fact for you. I actually I stumbled upon this earlier this week. Aaron Judge does not have 1,000 hits. He's got 990, and he's worth 50 career WAR.
Oh my gosh!
Before getting to 1,000 hits,
if Aaron Judge retired tomorrow, because I know that's the case for Mike Trout, if he retired tomorrow, he'd be a Hall of Famer. Would Aaron Judge be a Hall of Famer? I feel like maybe.
Oh, that would be close.
It'd be really close, yeah. Because 50 doesn't really do it in most circumstances.
I think he would. I think he would.
I think he would too. I think he would too. People would fill in some of the blanks if.
Part of it's he's a Yankee. He did all this greatness while a Yankee, but like you look at that Baseball Reference page, it's Koufax like, and it's short, but a lot of black ink.
Yeah. All right, we've got to close this down. We've gone way overboard. I've still got my interview with Devin Williams coming up. Why don't you do this for us, Kurt? It is your the best way we can close down any episode of Microbrew. It's with your take of the week. Here it is, Kurt Blanche.
You are hitting second in the lineup, and I am third. No, you are third. I am hitting second. Bad analogy to start.
Okay. Okay.
You're offering the protection in the lineup for me because you.
Great.
Wait, no. No. I've got this all wrong. You're setting me up. I'm offering the lineup protection for you. You set this on a platter for me, talking about the contact play. Your face right now, you're looking like, what is this?
I'm just extremely confused. Why did you do this? Just say what you want to say. Look,
here's what we got. The contact play, as you brought up, had a good week. Had a great week. Brewers scored, what, 4 runs off of it? And then the one instance, they did get thrown out at home on Friday night in the first inning. But nevertheless, they scored as many runs as they would have scored in that inning anyway had they not run on contact. The contact play, JR, gets a bad rap.
It gets a
really bad rap. You may not know this from being on the internet.
Well,
famously, a play where guys get out at home plate. And that is a frustrating thing for baseball fans to watch because you go from, oh, my guy's on third base. He is for sure going to score this run. We have to score here. Otherwise, it's a total abject failure. And then you see the guy get thrown out at home and you go, total abject failure. But not so much. Not so fast. Mm. Now, there's instances in which you don't want to see that happen. But the contact play is run for a reason by these teams. I don't have to go in. You know, it's pretty obvious if you think about the play. I don't have to go into the X's and O's of this, but the guy at first usually doesn't get out. The hitter usually doesn't get out. If there's a guy in first, he goes to second base. If there's a guy in second base, he goes to third base. You are still ending that situation with the exact same number of runners on base as you were going into it almost every time. Obviously there's caveats. Like if the bases are loaded, but then like you said, not really contact play in that case. Sometimes, JR, as we learned this week, 4 times actually, you can score on this play. Everything has to go right for the defense for you to not score on that play.
Frequently, it does go right because the Major League Baseball defense is good.
Sure, sure. But then also, like, okay, what if your guy on third can get into a pickle? Then the runner, if there's no one else on base, that hitter can round first and go to second. Or they can steal second if they have any semblance of speed in today's game. So you're still ending up with a guy in scoring position. Now, if there's nobody out and a guy at third, probably don't want to make that first out at home. Not a good idea. But I'm here to defend the contact play. It is wholesome. It is true. It is everything that is good about the game of baseball. Except when it doesn't work, and then it's bad.
You can't convince me to fall in love with it, but you can convince me that it's fine. I think the it is also to me a function of modern baseball, because quite honestly, the next guys are going to strike out. Like, if the ball's in play, you got to take your moment, right? I don't know if this is true, but I would imagine that baseball in general scores far fewer runners at third with less than two outs or with nobody out than it used to, because the strikeout rates went through the roof. So I don't know. I think you're probably preparing yourself to, you know, if you make that out, you weren't going to score anyway. So you might as well give it that shot, right? You were going to need a hit to score that run anyway, if they just quickly throw to first and get that out and nobody advances. It's just a logic thing. Like, it just makes sense to take advantage of what you got. Like you said, first out, that's not good. If there's a leadoff triple and he tries to score and then he's thrown out at home, yeah, that's bad. Because it cost yourself two bases at that point on top of, you know, that was basically your cost. You went from zero outs, runner at third to one out, but runner at first. Two bases is a lot. But that's really the only time, I think. So I'm with you. Logically speaking, the contact play makes sense. It makes sense. It's ugly and no one wants to see it, but it makes sense.
It gets a bad rap. I'm just here to defend the thing that has a bad rap.
I appreciate that, Kurt. That's what I appreciate about you. We are nothing if not... Actually, I don't know where I was going with that. I don't know.
If nothing if not just?
We're just. We are just. We are the scales of justice. That's right. The Milwaukee Brewers are 20 games above 500. I don't know how they got there either, but they are. They're here. They can clinch the tiebreaker over the St. Louis Cardinals at some point this week as they go to St. Louis for three games starting on Tuesday. That really isn't going to come into play because they're 11 games up and there's 39 to play. So they're going to beat the Cardinals. But I don't know if they'll win this series per se, going out on the road to face St. Louis and Oakland. This is okay. Last year's Oakland experience was not good at American Family Field. They got swept by Oakland, but in theory, there are some wins to be had on a trip to Oakland. We'll find out. And that will be the week. So that's going to do it for this edition of Microbrew. Kurt, any last thoughts before I send you away?
No, no thoughts. No. Goodbye, Oakland. No, see you never.
See you never. All right. Yeah. Tough. All right. We will move now to my interview with Devin Williams. Got a chance to talk to the closer. He is back, as we said. Had a chance to chat with him. So here is that. Thanks for tuning into this edition of Microbrew. I will talk to you later. Goodbye, friends. My guest is Devin Williams, closer for the Milwaukee Brewers. Got his first save of the season on August 10th against the Reds. He is back. And part of this Brewers bullpen, I'm going to throw you a curveball, though, to start with. You were on my podcast 5 years ago, and we talked about your one at-bat in Major League Baseball, which did not go well. You had a couple hits in the minors. Now that we don't see the batting from the pitchers anymore, I wonder who you think the best hitting pitcher on this team is. Who is the sneaky good bat that no one knows about on this team?
I mean, currently?
Yeah. Maybe it's you.
I'm going to go with myself. Still.
That's
haven't
good.
Swung a bat in years, and I still feel like I could do better than most of the guys on our team.
Yeah. Are you bummed that the rules changed? I mean, as a reliever, it probably wouldn't have affected you very much. But.
I mean, I wouldn't mind facing a pitcher every once in a while, you know?
Yeah.
That'd
be cool.
Not that I'd really get to do that in the ninth inning, but...
Probably not, no. It was unusual circumstances in 2019.
Yeah.
That was before, you know, a lot has happened since then. Where do you keep your Rookie of the Year statue? Is that the, or whatever award they gave you? Is that prominently placed on your mantle? Is that the thing?
Yeah, I've got a room at home with all my awards in it.
Okay. Reliever of the Year get preference?
Yeah, that's on the top shelf.
Okay, top shelf, good.
Still waiting. I never got it from last year.
What?
They still have it here. They're holding it hostage. I got to wait till the end of the year to take it home with me.
That's ridiculous. They've got it on display, I take it.
They wanted to present it to me on the field at the beginning of this season. So.
But you weren't available. I get it. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, we did the presentation, but I just haven't had a chance to take it home yet.
Got it. Okay. So it will get preference once it gets home.
Absolutely.
When you hear somebody broke their back, that sounds really, really bad. How close was this to being like a serious thing that would, you know, never go away? Like, I don't know how close this was to being really, really bad.
I mean, I'm not a doctor, and I'm not going to pretend that I am. So.
Okay.
I mean, I know that it could have turned into something more serious had I continued to pitch. But from my understanding, we let it heal, you know, the bones fused back together. And,
sure.
And I did a lot of core work to, you know, shore up that side. So
okay.
That takes stress off of my back as well. So hopefully as long as I stay on top of it and, you know, stay strong core-wise, it won't be an issue in the future.
Yeah. I hear you save the ball from every save, if you can. What are some of the more memorable ones? Do you have some that stand out? You've worked your way out of some incredible jams and incredible close games.
I mean, they're all special.
Sure, sure, yeah. Wins.
That's kind of, you know, the idea is to lock down as many games as you can.
Yeah.
I don't know though. I think if we went through them, and you like put the game and the like opponent in front of me, I think I could walk you through each one without even you showing me. Like,
that's cool.
I don't know. I have a really good memory, and like I remember at bats. That's how I, you know, attack guys that I faced already. I remember what I've done to them in the past.
Sure, sure.
Maybe I want to deviate from that. Maybe I don't. But yeah, I mean, they're all individually special in their own way.
Okay. Back to what's at home on your shelf. Any Airbender Ale? Do you still have any saved there after you brewed that last year?
I think I might have a few bottles still.
Nice, okay.
They didn't print me off any labels, so it's not like it's really a cool display piece.
Oh, that's too bad. We got.
Yeah, Hurt got a cool can for his beer this year. But
that's ridiculous. You got to demand more.
It is what it is.
I want my trophies and I want my cool beer. That's weird. You know, I know you're a big soccer fan. Man U, I think, is your team, right? Yeah. Did I see that you once almost quit when you were young, quit baseball to play soccer? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Who talked you out of that?
My grandfather.
Okay.
I wanted to quit. I think it was seventh grade. I wanted to play year round because I just play in the summer. And then in the fall, winter, I'd play soccer.
Yeah, of course.
And I felt like I was missing out. So I was ready to quit baseball altogether and just play soccer year round. And he was like, well, if you quit soccer, I'm not paying for it. Or if you quit baseball, I'm not paying for any soccer stuff. So
yeah. All right. Well, that's a pretty good reason. Were you an all-around player or just a pitcher as a baseball player?
No, like growing up, I always played shortstop or center field.
Sure. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. You're one of the longest tenured guys on this team now. You've been to a lot of, you know, seen a lot of playoff experience, seen a lot of playoff teams. What do you think makes this one different? Or if there isn't something specific, what has to happen, do you think, for this team to kind of break through that wall in the playoffs and go deeper? Not assuming you're going to be there, but it's looking good. That's all.
I mean, I don't know. You can never predict those things,
right? Yeah.
Every year there's just the random team that no one expects to go deep. And then next thing you know, they're in the World Series. But I mean, I think for us, the key is just to continue like the path that we're on. You know, we've made impressions on people already to this point, you know, just to be where we are right now. No one was expecting this. And I think we just need to keep our head down and keep grinding. You know, we've got, I mean, I would say a really good mix of like guys that have been around and then also guys that this is their first year. So they're they're hungry. You know, they want to prove that they belong here and that they're good enough to play at this level. I think it's kind of that veteran mixed with the youth of this team has kind of, you know, it's been what keeps us going, you know? Like, there's days where, like, I don't know, people get kind of down. Like, maybe, like, the young guys are struggling a little bit. And then you have vets to keep you grounded.
For sure.
Keep you going. And then vice versa. It's like, you as a veteran guy, sometimes you might take it for granted a little bit. And then those young guys are there to, like, kind of pull you back and, it kind of keeps it in perspective, you know, like where you are and how special it is to be on a team.
Last one, you've been here now 5 years. What is special about the city of Milwaukee to you? It doesn't have to be anything at the park. Like, what are the places, the characteristics you found that have made this a special place to play baseball?
Yeah. I mean, we're the smallest market in the league.
Yeah.
Which is a good and a bad thing, but I like it because it's just such a chill place, you know, like coming home is very relaxing. Whereas like some places it might be you're going back home and you're going into a hectic situation.
Right.
You know, where it's like stressful, which is not the case here at all.
Right, right. All right. Well, thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn.
and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.